Feel Live. Made in Sheffield. Made by you.
You know your business better than anyone. So when you need finance to grow, you deserve a lender who understands too. Responsible finance providers look at the whole picture, the story behind the numbers, your plan and what you want to achieve. Our fair, flexible finance, decided by real people, not a computer, helps thousands of businesses every year. Find out more at findingfinance.org.uk. Finding Finance is a trading style of the Community Development Finance Association, which is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. A regulated credit broker and not a lender. We provide information only in respect of community development finance institutions and other finance providers, which may be available to you from our approved panel of lenders. Finding Finance. .org.uk.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Welcome one and all to Thank Goodness It's Folk. 2 hours of great folk music here on Sheffield Live, coming out of Sheffield in Yorkshire, the UK, 93.2 FM in Sheffield on the FM dial, or you can catch it around the world on www.sheffieldlive.org every Friday from 10 till 12 with me, James Fagan, and Sam Hindley. Me in the first half, and today Sam will be joining you in the second half, and we have a bumper program for you. We'll honour the life of the great English-Greek singer-songwriter George Papavieras and hear some of his beautiful songs. We'll talk to Emily Portman about her first solo release in over 10 years, which comes out on May the 1st. The album is called Dominion of Spells, and I'll speak to Emily in the first half about that record. It's a fascinating interview, and I'm really glad you can join us to hear it. And the songs are beautiful as well. In the second half, Sam will be joined by the great Sean Cooney, you might know from The Young'uns, but also a prolific writer and producer of radio shows in his own right, and he has just written a wonderful ballad opera, if you like, or folk memoir of the Peterloo Massacre. It's called Peter's Field, and he will join Sam to tell you about the tour and the album in the second half. As well as that, we have a Friday's Child feature this week on Bonnie James Campbell, also known as Bonnie George Campbell, and it is a wonderful ballad. We've got some cracking versions of that for you. We've got new music from Kate Burke, among other things, a new album to me that's very old indeed, from Bob Dylan, but recently discovered by me. All this and much more on today's Thank Goodness It's Folk. Let us know you're listening and enjoy the show.
Keep things simpler these days. In a kind of crazy way. Now you're standing there outside the barbershop. It's like something has stopped. It's quiet on the train. I count the paces in between. Yeah, I know where I've been. I can't remember when you became my oxygen. But now I breathe easily. You'd best believe me. What will we take? What will we leave? behind? spaces, guide our eyes up high. It's kind of wild, but pretty fragile. You have a cynical turn of mind that somehow makes me feel fine. We could be pleasantly surprised. What will we take? What will we leave behind? What will we find? 'Cause it's not chaos after all, it's still similarity. You're familiar to me. Time is not linear. We exist here. Time is not linear. We exist here.
Beautiful stuff there from Kate Burke to open the program today. Hello, good morning. Hope you're having a good day so far. Kate Burke, Australian singer-songwriter. You might know her from her duo with Ruth Hazelton, who have played on the show before as well. You might know her from Trouble in the Kitchen. You might know her from The New Graces. But very excitingly, Kate Burke has finally got around to making a solo album, and it will drop on March the 31st. The album is called Familiar. And that was the title track, which is already available if you want to download it now on Bandcamp. I have a really, really lovely interview coming up with the great singer-songwriter Emily Portman, who lives in Sheffield and has a lot to say about her new record, about the 10 years that have happened to her in her world and her life and her family since her last solo record came out. And also we have a chat about artificial intelligence and how it has affected art and music, and specifically how in 2025 a couple of albums were made fraudulently by artificial intelligence claiming to be the work of Emily Portman, when we catch up on what that was like to be impersonated by a robot on the internet, and how it gave her extra incentive to complete her beautiful new record, which is called Dominion of Spells. So let's get stuck into that, because it's an interview I really, really want you to hear. And before we go any further, let's hear one of the singles, which is already released. The whole album isn't out until May the 1st, but there are two singles, and we're going to hear both of them, one before we talk to Emily and one after. And the first one is this one. It's called Fox's Song. This is an amazing piece of music about transformation, and Emily will talk to us about the process of writing these songs and about the meanings behind them after this. So enjoy this segment with Emily Portman. Here is Fox's Song.
I broke out of this old shell. It was weighing heavy. Didn't notice all I carried until it almost crushed me. I walked away from my old life. My lover turned a stranger. He closed his eyes, absolved himself, saw neither love nor danger. I spent the night in a cold dark cave, hard rock for my pillow. I cried till I could cry no more. Years of untold sorrow. A voice spoke to me in the dark. Look up, look all around. But there's a shell for you to shed, and new skin but it gave me little cover. My throat caught with a rasping bark. So I tried on a cloak of red, soft fur with russet glow. It fit me like a second skin and told me,
was Fox's Song, a new single from the forthcoming album from my guest on this morning's program, Emily Portman. Her new album is called Dominion of Spells, and I know many, many people out there will be exceptionally excited that the time has finally come. Well, we're very close to the time when Emily's new album is out. Now, it's been a little while since you've made a solo album, Emily, and there is much anticipation, not just from your fans and friends, but I imagine from yourself. Welcome to the program, and you must be very excited about Dominion of Spells.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, James. I am excited. It has been a long time in coming, and some of the songs are quite new and some of them have been around for a few years. So, yeah, it just can't come soon enough, really, for me. It's out on the 1st of May, so not long to go.
That's a good folky date to release your new record. Is it a coincidence?
Well, actually, yeah, it was on purpose. As the records thought that it would be nice to pick a nice kind of auspicious date like the 1st of May, you know.
Well, why not? Emily, the album deals with so many themes, but rather than read out the press release, seeing as we have you on the show, perhaps you could tell the listeners a little bit about some of the themes that you've been exploring, because your last album, Coracle, it's not a million miles in some ways from the themes, but you have been through 10 or 11 more years of life since then, and you've been a busy mum, you've been working in all sorts of areas outside of your solo work. How do you think the new album reflects that, and what are the themes of the new record for you?
Yeah, there are kind of threads that run through the album, and one of the main ones really is quite kind of seminal for me. It's transformation and metamorphosis. Mm. And I think because I had a big break from writing and was mostly singing traditional songs and working with the Furrow Collective, and then I really started to kind of deeply miss writing songs, even though I knew that, you know, it's hard being a songwriter in today's climate, and yeah, so that in lots of ways there didn't seem like much impetus to be making another of my own albums. Mm. but on the from a kind of personal point of view, I just really wanted to write again. And so I did. I started writing and I found myself really drawn back to the old folk tales and to specifically ones of transformation that have been kind of fascinating me since I first started writing when I released The Glamoury, you know, kind of going on, I don't know how many years ago.
A couple of years.
Yeah, just a couple of years back. And so, yeah, I went back to old folk tales and I was also writing about my own experiences of motherhood and turning 40 and entering a midlife stage and all that that brings. And then I moved to Sheffield and got a health diagnosis, which kind of confronted me with my own mortality. And yeah, a lot happened. And I felt like writing really helped me through that time, really, and helped me in a kind of cathartic way to work through some of that.
Well, so, I'm very interested in what you've just said about the climate we live in now and how that might apply to songwriters, because I think about that a lot. And, you know, you have a couple of options as a songwriter, and I think you've explored how you might break out of those couple of options. One of them is to comment on the world we live in and the politics and the climate and the war that is literally happening around us all the time. Then there's another approach, which is to not deal with any of that. And it seems talk about yourself and about the day-to-day struggles of just being a human being. And some might even say, you know, there's a genre called navel gazing. I'm not quite sure I know what that is. But somewhere outside all of those things is the songs that you and I and all the friends that I know who like old songs and like ballads and like traditional music, there seems to be a third path there. And it seems to be that's the path that you're exploring. It's a combination of your interest and knowledge of old songs and of tradition and the fact that you are a person in the modern world and you're, you know, what you've just said, the themes that you have touched on. Is that something you've always known as a songwriter, or do you think that that is something that now is becoming more evident to you?
Oh, I like what you just said there, James, about the third path, because that, of course, as we know, is the path to fairyland. And I do actually go to fairyland in the album. So, yeah, I do think that there is obviously, you know, to both mix together traditional songs with everyday life, it can be a really powerful thing to do. These stories have such power in them so often, you know, and I think they can be political in a personal kind of way, I find. And really, I think for me, what I kept on coming back to is this sense of the kind of magic and wonder that creativity itself brings, and the worth of creativity as well. You know, it's always worth doing it, you know. And there's everybody trying to tell us that we should be doing this and that and earning and posting on Instagram and all, you know, all these kind of modern pressures that actually spend that creativity, it can be quite radical in a way, you know, actually just spending time and valuing the art of songwriting. It can feel quite important and radical in this time and these times now. So
amazingly, so
your question,
it does answer my question and it raises so many more. And what one of the questions I have for you is that in the 10 or 11 years since you last released an album, a solo album, there is so much expectation on us as artists. There's so much pressure on us. But I do wonder if that pressure is partly created by ourselves. We have this technology. We have Instagram and Facebook and all of the other ways that we're supposed to share our world and our lives. And there's a hunger, it seems, amongst certainly younger. I was told by a woman on a train once that if my music with Nancy wasn't on Instagram, then we were nobody. And she just said it to me, like, straight out. She said, I said, we're on Facebook. And she said, oh, no one looks at that anymore. And I realized that I was a nobody. It was kind of liberating in a way. But also, it's strange, isn't it? That decade, so much has changed. But what hasn't changed is music, storytelling, humanity, emotion, These things that you talk about in your record, the things that we sing about in traditional music, they are unchanging. It is presumptuous of to think that our generation might be so important that we can change, you know, we can change any of that stuff. We are traveling through, we're passing through. And so the rest of it is kind of ephemeral, isn't it? But it pays to think about that sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the connections, the connection that music can bring. We know that, we both know from doing this for a few years, that the magic of performing is that moment when the song lands in a room or the tune, and you feel it connecting with people.
Absolutely.
And I mean, in a funny way, that is what the album's about. It's about that kind of magic. You know, I talk about magic and it might all sound a bit mystical, but for me, the magic that I'm talking about in the album is actually that magic, the kind of magic of the everyday, of feeling that sense of wonder. And for me personally, I find that in writing songs and in connecting with people. And it's a very kind of human thing, you know?
I do, Emily.
We don't need to lose sight of, I think.
I do. I agree. And it brings me on to a topic which I didn't want to dwell on too much with you, but I think it's important. And the questions and what we've chatted about lead to it quite neatly, which is the fact that, you know, we look at the internet now and we see this barrage, particularly over the last 12 months, of artificially created art, artificially created music. You know, it's very hard to know now when you turn your computer on if what you're looking at is real or created by a robot. And it's quite disarming. And I think that it's miraculous, actually, that anyone is in their right mind sometimes in this world that we live in. And one of the touchstones for me and for many, many people is hanging on to human-created art, not necessarily because it's better, although it is, but also because it's human. And so by hanging on to it, we hang on to ourselves and we hang on to something that is irreplaceable by technology and by computers. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because you, quite famously in the folk world, and also I think a lot of people would have read about this outside the folk world, you and other musicians last year experienced a very bizarre thing, which is where people got in touch with you to talk to you about your new record on Spotify and other streaming platforms, only to be told by you that you hadn't made one. Could you tell us a little bit, for people who don't know, what happened to you last year?
Yeah, so there was a fraudulent AI-generated album brought out under my name, and it was without my knowledge, obviously, as you say. And it was really disturbing. I was really confused by it when people started telling me I had an album out and I didn't. And it just turned out that it was trained by an AI program to copy my music. It was generated out of my musical catalogue, which is hugely disturbing.
Indeed.
And obviously I can't prove it. And actually what I then found was that actually artists have very little power in situations like this beyond just asking for it to be taken down from all the platforms. You know, it was everywhere under my name on my platform. And so I just had to ask for it to be taken down and accept that, unfortunately, the government hasn't updated its laws to really account for AI and to help protect artists when this kind of, I think I would call it fraudulent activity happens.
There's absolutely no doubt that it's fraud, because it is somebody or some, I mean, there is a human behind it. I do believe so. I hope so. it is fraud because it's personality impersonation. It's taking somebody's identity. So identity theft is a crime, and you know, as far as I can tell, that is a fraudulent and criminal business, because fortunately you noticed early and you had it taken down. You know, it's estimated that the profit from the streams that the album had probably amount to £4.40, which is about, that's a good lesson for anyone out there who thinks artists do well from Spotify, £4.40.
Exactly.
Which, you know, if you sell one album on Bandcamp, one album, ladies and gentlemen, of Emily Portman's new record, will make more than all of the streams of Orca that happened in the whole time it was up there. If you want some, you know, a reality check on streaming. But nevertheless, it is disturbing, and it I can understand why you felt the way you did. At the same time, I suppose it provided a strange kind of impetus for you to do what you were doing, which was creating your own new work, and you had been in the process of doing that. And just before we came on air, you did say to me that it actually did have an effect, and it there was an interaction with the knowledge of what had happened to you. And how could there not be as you went forward to produce new creative work?
Yeah, I felt like I kind of doubled down on my determination, really, to get the record done, and thought, right, well, I'm bringing out a real album, and it's going to be better. You know, and I kind of say, it doesn't matter what the music's like, but it is going to be better.
Of course.
I mean, for so many reasons, and because I made it, and because it came out of real human experience, and I just think that's just inherently worth more, whether you like it, the music, or not, really. And what you're saying is just so, it's so important, and I think it really does connect to the fact that streaming has kind of broken so many things for musicians, in that we no longer earn a huge amount of money out of the actual music we make anymore. And I think, in a funny way, the AI really highlighted that.
You're right. And I think that one of the problems musicians have had is that I think that that non-musicians and people who use streaming platforms have just assumed that we're just in it for the money, and that our concerns are purely financial, but they are far from it. You know, none of us would be focusing as if it was just for the money. That's not what we're motivated by. So I think that there are deeper ethical concerns. We know that Spotify have not invested their money in ways that a lot of people find acceptable, but also it is the tip of an iceberg in terms of the dehumanization of art and of our music. And I think that what you've just said really has made me think about something. It's not the money, it's the art, and it's the humanity.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that I would really love to see governments really recognizing the value, the human value of art, and seeing that it really needs both supporting and kind of protecting, is the word I'm looking for, protecting in terms of law, so that these kind of things don't happen, and so that the AI companies don't just mine all of our, I mean, it's already happened, but there are some retrospective laws put in about our copyright and our musical identities. I think that's really important. But it's also really heartened me in many ways, just because I've felt the support of people, and I've felt the outrage of people when they've said, we don't want this to happen. We don't want music to be generated at a touch of a button, stealing all of your music. You know, this isn't acceptable. And I really feel that it's important to say that as well. I don't think this is happening with us all just going, oh, well, we better get used to that now. Absolutely not. We're not. We don't accept.
We don't accept it, Emily. Well, let's look at your actual art then, and the real you, and tell us what people are going to hear when they buy, which they will, because they want you to succeed and they want you to do well and they want you to create more of your beautiful songs. What will they hear musically and creatively when they hear Dominion of Spells, and who else is involved?
Well, I have written all the songs, and so you'll hear lots of story songs inspired by metamorphosis and folk tales and midlife and all sorts. And on the album are Louis Campbell, beautiful guitarist. You might know him from his duo with Owen Spafford.
Yep.
And I mean, there's a whole host of amazing musicians on the album. Lucy Revis, Sheffield's own Lucy Revis, who works for Trax, she has put some beautiful cello on the album, and we are going out on tour next week, so that will be fantastic.
Oh, that's
But there are lots
wonderful.
Of others. Well, looking forward to that. There's lots of others on the album as well, so you'll have to Have a listen.
absolutely. And also, it's worth mentioning, as always, that you have the support of wonderful Hudson Records, Helen and Andy Bell, and they just are so supportive, not just in a financial way of artists. They are supportive creatively, aren't they, as a record label?
Absolutely, yeah. It's so great to have their support, and I really feel the support has been so needed and useful for me as I'm kind of tentatively coming back to songwriting and performing again after a decade. You know, it's those kind of communities that we create are so important to independent artists like me. And, you know, we're all friends and we're all helping each other out, really. That's what it comes down to.
Definitely, Emily. Well, tell us about the tour then, and tell us specifically for Sheffield listeners about what's happening here in Sheffield.
So the tour starts on Thursday, the 12th of March, and has a little run down south, and then eventually winds its way back up north to Sheffield at the Greystones Pub, which is on my road. So it's the nearest gig I will ever do.
Excellent.
Pretty good. So that will be on the 22nd of March. And before that, there I'm doing Manchester Folk Festival and a gig in Leeds as well at Open Source. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure your listeners are too, and I'm sure anyone just tuning in for the first time who hasn't discovered your music, Emily Portman, the real Emily Portman, is about to release this wonderful record, Dominion of Spells. From what I've heard, it's absolutely spellbinding, literally, and breathtaking. It is about transformation, it is about so many things, and it draws on Emily's rich knowledge of folklore, but also her interest in how magic intersects with our real lives in 2025. Emily, I think it's a beautiful record from what I've heard. I'm really excited that it's coming out. And I'm very happy for you, because I think it is the culmination of, you know, 10 years of living and of settling in a new place, and of your family as well. And I have a deep sense from reading about it and from listening to it and from talking to you today of what this means to you. And I'm really thrilled for you, actually.
Oh, thank you, James. That's so lovely to hear. Yeah, and thanks for having me on the program.
You're very welcome. And would you do us the honour of introducing the next track, which is the opening track from the record and is called Turn Again? What would you like us to listen out for?
So Turn Again was inspired by my son's imaginary shape-shifting games, where he turns into different entities, and children so often play like that, and it struck me that they understand the notion of transformation so kind of naturally and innately, and it's also inspired by the beautiful ballad of Tamlin, and Tam asks his true love Janet to hold me fast and fear me not when the fairies turn him into different shapes.
Oh, yes.
And by holding him, Janet frees Tamlin from his enchantment. And so I just felt this was a beautiful image, and it kind of applies to parenthood, that feeling of we hold our children through all of their changes, and simultaneously we learn to let them go. So that's Turn Again.
Thank you, Emily. Have a wonderful spring, and I hope to see you very soon. I hope to see you at the Greystones on the 22nd of March, but if not, I hope to see you very soon, maybe in the Botanic Gardens, as we met last time.
Yeah, fantastic.
Take care. Here's Emily Portman with Turn Again from Dominion of Spells.
You will turn to a disco ball, dazzling all within your thrall. Then you will turn into a crow, slipping between the grainy shadows. You will turn to a mirror maze, entrapping all till they learn your ways. Then you will turn to Mercury, just out of grasp, away from me. molten gold to a funeral pie, and you will turn to a seer, a clown, a firework shrieking through the town, and I will learn your changing name as you turn. Watch me run, for I will turn and turn again, but a shining
tell me where we're heading, Lincoln County Road or Armageddon. Seem like I've been down this way before. Is there any truth in that, Senor? Senor, Senor, do you know where she's hiding? How long are we gonna be riding? How long must I keep my eyes glued to the door? Will there be any comfort there, Senor? There's a wicked wind still blowing on that upper deck. There's an still hanging down from around our neck. There's a marching band still playing in that vacant lot. Well, she held me in her arms one time and said, forget me not. Senor, Senor, I can see that painted wagon. Smell the tail of the dragon. Can't stand the suspense anymore. Can you tell me who to contact here, Senor? Thank you.
Hey, senor, senor, you know their hearts are as hard as leather. Well, give me a minute, let me get it together. Just gotta pick myself up off the floor. I'm ready when you are, senor.
From 1978's Street Legal, the amazing song Senor, also called Tales of Yankee Power by Bob Dylan. And I must admit, I am new to Street Legal. Having been a Dylan fan all my life, it's one album that has failed to land on my radar until the last couple of weeks, and I've been listening to it over and over again. My particular favourite tracks are Changing of the Guards, No Time to Think, and, well, obviously, Is Your Love in Vain, Baby Stop Crying, and that amazing song, Senor, Tales of Yankee Power, which seems rather appropriate in this the week of awful news of yet more war, this one with no apparent end in sight and no clear end point or goal. It's worrying times, without a doubt. So let me play you some music to comfort and console in these hard times. And who better than the songwriter George Papageorgiou, who sadly passed away just a couple of days ago after a long battle with cancer. He has been suffering with cancer for a number of years. I say suffering. One of the most inspirational things about George, apart from his songwriting, was in the knowledge of his ailing health over 10 years and his struggles, not just with cancer, but with heart failure. He has been a presence in many of our lives, even after retiring from songwriting, through his wisdom and his good humour. And I know hundreds of people who have been following George's comical and imaginative postings over the last 10 years. But before that, of course, George was beloved and very well known, not just on the English folk scene, but worldwide, as a songwriter of good humour, of wisdom, the word again, and of social conscience. And his songs have been recorded by many people. One of my very favourite recordings is Andy Irvine's beautiful version of George's Empty Handed, a very powerful song about a farmer whose pride is really at stake because of his suffering in drought conditions and his pride being broken by having to beg for help from the bank. It's such a powerful song, and we'll play Andy Irvine singing Empty Handed on a future program. But I think we should hear the master songwriter, George Papageorgiou himself. And I know that Sean Cooney, who you'll hear in the second half, is going to be talking a bit about George as well with Sam Hindley, and playing another George song in the meantime. So we send our love and condolences to Vanessa and to George's children and his extended family and his friends. George will be sorely missed on the folk scene and on the songwriting scene in general. Condolences as well to Rob Johnson, a great friend of George's as well. Here is George himself from his amazing record, Ordinary Heroes, which you should definitely check out. It's got Empty Handed on it, but it also has this wonderful song, very appropriate for the times, for the week that we live in. This is The Flowers and the Guns by George Papavieras.
Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns? The flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns, dried up and pressed inside a frame, they never get a second glance. The love that we would banish war with on bombed out streets now naked stands. Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns? Where is the innocence of youth, the stars that once were in our eyes? When did we learn to cover truth with our excuses and our lies? When did our ideals falter? Tell me, when did we change our plans? Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns? Our lives from others we have learned to separate. From evil we have earned our eyes. More often war it is and not love that we make. And all the time we compromise. We used to turn the other cheek, but now we turn a face away. We were the blessed and the meek, a future brighter than the day. We've forgotten Luther's message. We never ask ourselves, not once. Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns? But we've arrived, and as we pat each other's backs, our principles we now betray. Year on year as we progress and we advance, it's not just hair that's turning grey. Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns?
Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns?
Where are the lessons we would pass on to our daughters and our sons?
Where are the lessons we would pass on to our daughters and our sons?
And did we ever make a difference?
And will we ever make a difference? And
did we ever stand a chance?
Or will we ever stand a chance?
Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the guns? Did we ever make a difference? And did we ever stand a chance? Where are the flowers that we put into the muzzles of the gun?
Friday's Child.
Friday's Child, that's me.
A child ballad every Friday.
We're up to Child Ballad 210, which has two names, Bonnie James Campbell or Bonnie George Campbell. Bronson published five tunes for this in his wonderful collection, obviously some of them Scottish, but it was also collected very famously in America. And we're going to play you a couple of versions. I'm going to play you a version, first of all, from the wonderful American Anglo duet Kath and Phil Tyler. And in the second half, we'll hear an absolutely fantastic alternative Scottish version from the wonderful June Tabor. I remember when we spoke to June Tabor on this program, she mentioned Bonnie James Campbell as one of those classic ballads that she can picture these as almost like scenes from a film. I'll just read you a little bit of the text. High upon Highlands, low upon Tay, Bonnie George Campbell rode out on one day, all saddled, all bridled, and booted rode he, and home came the saddle, but never came he. It's a powerful story. It's a catchy song. And the first version you're going to hear, the tune, as far as I can work out, was learnt from Kath and Phil Tyler, from the singers Rory and Alex McEwan, who were legends of the Scottish revival in the 1950s and were very popular in America as well. In fact, they were known as Scotland's answer to the Everly Brothers. I'm going to play you a minute of those two great performers, Rory and Alex McEwan, who were recorded in the 1950s by Peter Kennedy with their version of Bonnie James Campbell, the same version you'll then hear, sung by Kath and Phil Tyler. And we have another version from June Tabor in the second half.
High upon Highlands and lay upon Tay, Bonnie George Campbell rade out on a day. Saddled and bridled, say gallant to see, him came his good horse, but never came he.
Thank you.
that's it from me in the first half, but do stick with us because Sam Hindley is joined by Sean Cooney from the Young'uns talking about his wonderful tour and project, Peter's Field. After this, I'll leave you with a song for spring from Peter Bellamy.
And the bottomless repertoire of the Copper family again. A song that's been a favourite of mine for a very long time, called When Spring Comes On. All you people who remember how the Copper family sing it, forget it. When spring comes on. When spring comes on, then the birds do sing, the lambs do skip and the bells do ring, while we enjoy their glorious charm, so noble and so gay. The primrose blooms, the cowslip too, the violets in their sweet retire, the roses shining through, the briar and the daffodilies which we admire will die and fade away. Young men and maidens, they will be seen on mountains high and meadows green. They do talk of love and sport and play, while them young lambs do skip away. At night they homeward wend their way, when evening stars appear. The primrose blooms, the cowslip too, the violets in their sweet retire, the roses shining through, the briar and the daffodilies which we admire will die and fade away. The dairymaid to milking goes, her blooming cheeks as red as a rose, and she carries a pail all on her arm, so cheerful and so gay. She milks, she sings, the valleys ring, the small birds on the branches there sit listening to this love life fair, for she is her master's trust and care, she is the ploughman's joy. The primrose blooms, the cowslips too, the violets in their sweet retire, the roses shining through, the briar and the daffodilies which we